We see it all too often, video of someone stranded on the roof of a car surrounded by fast-moving, murky, brown water. No matter how often emergency experts remind us never to drive through standing water, somebody's in a hurry, it doesn't look that bad. You've driven under that bridge 1,000 times, and before you know it, you're in trouble. If that's your story, if you've been in a car swept away by moving water, give us a call. We'd also like to hear from first responders. What mistakes do you see people make? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Mike Turnbull has trained thousands of first responders in flood, water, and rope rescue. He's president of Rescue 3 International, a training and certification company, and he joins us from a studio in Sacramento. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you.
And tell us why so many seemingly aware and intelligent people get themselves in this kind of trouble.
Well, you touched on a few of them. One is urgency to reach their destination. I'm going to be fired if I don't get to work. They have confidence in the route. They've taken it 1,000 times. Overinflated confidence in their big four-wheel drive that it'll go through any water.
Mm-hmm.
And ignoring the force and or ignorance about the force of moving water.
And that is something that is easy to overlook. It can look like it's just standing there, but in fact, it is moving, and it doesn't take much movement to pull away a car.
It sure doesn't. Just think about how much surface area the tire actually has on the road. And we have some statistics that we use as far as the pressure of moving water. And, of course, there's variables, you know, how deep it is and how fast it's moving and that sort of thing. But if you just generally, if you have a 3 miles an hour moving water, it exerts 17 pounds on your leg or that tire of that car. And you bump it up to 6 miles an hour, and it's not, you'd think it double, but it doesn't because of all the factors involved. It's actually four times. So it's really a multiplying factor. And even if you drive and you get to the first part of driving across the area that you're trying to cross, and as you go into it, it's okay. But then as you get deeper into it, that water moves faster. And all of a sudden, you're in a situation where that is sweeping your car downstream.
And, you know, we've all driven through a puddle. Where do you draw the line?
Well, I think that the thing is that what we talk about is that, first of all, if you have responders that do a pre-plan of the area, then they know that you, let's say, got a an underpass that has a tendency to flood all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then – so education is a big part of that. And for those people – for those first responders to know to put barricades up to stop people from going across that.
And it is, I'm told it is quite a dangerous part of first responders' careers.
It really is. We see a lot of responders that get into trouble because they haven't been educated on swift water or flood rescue. And it, not only does it take education, but it takes the proper equipment if they're going to go into that situation.
Well, most of these guys are firefighters, and they're wearing firefighters' equipment.
Yeah, and that's really a problem. One of the things that we've made it a we've been doing this for 30 years plus, and is to get out of your turnout clothes. Think about those heavy materials that are supposed to protect you from flame. But once they are saturated with water, they're not going to help you as far as a flotation device of any type. So we really preach having personal protective equipment, and that's having a PFD, having the right helmet, having the proper footwear, because you don't know what's in that water once you're starting to trudge into it. It's, like you said, murky. You can't see the bottom. You can't see, you know, is there barbed wire down there? Is there glass and rocks and those type of things? So having the proper equipment to do the job, and then having the training so that you know how to read a river. I always say that, you know, the river in China is exactly the same as the river in the United States. So once you know the rules of it, they're all the same.
Yeah, you said a PFD. What's that?
Personal flotation device, I'm sorry.
Okay.
And that's just basically giving that person some flotation if he is swept away.
Now, obviously, if a first responder sees somebody stranded in their car, they're going to try to walk out there. And obviously, if the water's moving fast enough to pull away a car, it's going to be moving fast enough to pull away a person.
Right, and that's where most of our what it does is adds to the victim count is what we talk about. Not only do you have somebody on the top of a car, but now you've got a rescuer in the water also. So courses like ours, which is the Swift Water Rescue, it's imperative that the firemen, if they're going to attempt to do a rescue, have all the tools that they need to make sure that they don't create more problems and have more victims in the water.
We want to hear today from people who found themselves in that situation. We'd also like to hear from first responders with stories about what people do wrong. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And we'll start with Kim. Kim with us from Wilburn in Arkansas.
Hi. I do swift water rescue from the point of view of whitewater boating. And one of the things that we have noticed is that a lot of the first responders in the area don't have a clue what to do with the boats that they have. And we think it's a major problem because they're going to put more people in danger because they don't have the boating experience, and yet they're trying to get out in the water with the boats. So the gear is a problem, but so is that. We'd also like to see whitewater swiftwater rescue people able to get involved in situations like the Little Missouri River flooding, where that entire campground got wiped out.
Yeah.
It was 2 days into it before they let the whitewater boaters on the water, and they participated in the rescue at that point, but by then it was recovery.
Mike Turnbull, well, go ahead.
Yeah. Kim, I would suggest that the agency having jurisdiction or whatever the fire department is that's near where you work on the river, we've had a very good success by holding classes where we bring those firemen and those people that are working in the river environment every day together so that they realize what their skills that are out there. We always say that the firemen usually have the great rope skills. They know how to set up the Z-rigs and all of those things to make the rescue, but they don't have the skills in the water like the people that are in there every day. So
right.
By putting a class together, Kim, that brings those two elements together, then if you have a disaster like the park that you were talking about, there's a familiarity there, and they know that they actually have more assets that they can pull upon to make that rescue happen and to help the people in need.
Hmm. Kim, what water do you work?
In Arkansas, but we also just got back from a 19-day Grand Canyon raft trip and had to do, you know, a rescue out there. But again, not related to what you're talking about, which is people who aren't intentionally on the water. So,
mm-hmm.
But again, I had a whole bunch of friends who showed up, responded to the Albert Pike campground where, you know, 20 people died this June when a flash flood swept through. And they couldn't get on the water to be able to do what they are very, very good at doing.
All right, Kim. Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Kim.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I would point out, I think there are flash floods today in Iowa and in Maryland. This is an email from Justin in Alexandria, Virginia. After growing up in Arizona and witnessing many submerged vehicles, I have to commend the law known as the Stupid Motorist Law. If one enters a flooded area despite a nearby sign saying, "Do not enter while flooded," the driver is responsible for the cost of the rescue. The benefit of this law is that it gets people talking and thinking about how much they don't understand about driving through flooded roads. Is that a law, Mike Turnbull, that you know about?
Well, I do, and I know that Texas has the same type of law. So it helps educate. I mean, anytime you talk about laws and fines and those type of things, people pay attention. So I think that's a great law, and I think that more municipalities should adopt that. And the whole thing is that if we can educate, you know, you spend $1 to educate, it costs $300 to train a rescuer. So that's a statistic that we talk about. So education is a big part of getting the public aware of what's going on.
Let's go next to Chris. And Chris with us from Fairfax, Virginia.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Chris. Go ahead, please.
I work for Fairfax County Fire and Rescue Department. And oftentimes when we're responding to calls like this, what we'll see is victims who are extremely scared, they're panicked, they have no way out of the situation, and of course, as a rescuer, you do your best to get to them, However, that can be a very difficult task due to the water moving extremely fast. Oftentimes, it's fairly shallow, so our boats won't go in. So we teach swift water or shallow water crossing techniques using boats without motors. But even then, it's very, very difficult to get to the folks. And if they have limited mobility for whatever reason, it can make things even more difficult, as well as, you know, elderly, children, things like that.
Sure. Have you done this yourself? Has there been an instance where you've had to do it?
Yes, sir.
And what happened?
The last one I was on Woodburn Road in Fairfax County. And, again, the motorist, we often put up barriers and flares to try and alert motorists that there's a hazard. But oftentimes motorists will ignore these signs, and they'll drive past the barriers and head on down the road. And that's what happened with this particular situation. The motorist got stranded because the car stalled out. The water kept rising, and before long the motorist was on the roof of their car waving for help. There was a floodplain that was about 400 yards wide and not very deep. So, again, it made it very difficult to get to them.
And did it all work out okay?
Yes, it did. Luckily for this motorist, we were able to retrieve them. However, had we left them there much longer, there was a fence that formed what we call a strainer. And this is an immovable object that is perpendicular to the current flow. And that motorist would have probably gotten rushed or washed off of the top of their car and pushed into that strainer, which is almost always certain death.
Chris, I'm glad it worked out. Thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Well, I appreciate Chris's call because he's doing half my job, and we have instructors with Fairfax County. So he's speaking the gospel from our standpoint.
Mike Turnbull, president of Rescue 3 International, which provides flood, water, and rope rescue training each year to 10 to 14,000 fire and rescue professionals in the U.S. and from around the world. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go next to, this is Mary. Mary with us from Denver.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to share a story of friends and maybe this will be instructive for young kids and teenagers, because when we were younger, we went rafting in the Chattahoochee River outside of Atlanta, Georgia, and it was pretty late at night, and a power plant had turned on that we didn't anticipate, so our raft got caught up in a log that had fallen into the river. All the ropes that we had tied our rafts together, our rafts went under the log. So we were sitting there until the wee hours in the morning. We had to send one of our party out to swim to shore, and just before dawn, the local fireman came, and he yelled, "I'm going to throw you my $10 fishing knife on this line. Don't lose it." And he did. He threw us on a fishing line, fishing pole. He threw out his knife, and we cut ourselves loose, and he brought us in. I just want to say they did a great job. They literally saved our lives, and you might want to tell kids not to go rafting in the river and don't tie your rafts together.
And don't do it in the dark.
Yes.
It was dark.
Yeah. All right, Mary. Thanks very much for the call. A lot of lessons learned there. Mike Turnbull, if you do mess up and find yourself in this situation, and as I understand it, as soon as the water rises up high enough to hit your muffler, your car is going to stall out pretty quickly thereafter. What should you do?
Well, I think that, first of all, a car will float for approximately 45 seconds. So you do have some time. And usually the batteries will keep providing power so that you can roll the windows down, because the first thing we need to do is try to get out of the vehicle, whether it's get on top of it or if it is going to start to roll, get away from the vehicle. So if possible, if the car does settle and it feels fairly stable, get on the top of the car. Get to the highest point. That's our instinct, and that is a good way to do it. And stay on the upstream side of the car, because if you're thinking about it, if you're on the downstream side, what that's going to tend to do with that current pushing it's going to cause that car to roll easier.
Right.
So that is your lifeline. If you're standing on top of that car, and stay there if you can, if the car is going to be stable. If it is going to roll, get away from it. get as far away as you can. And we teach a swimming position, which is your feet downstream, and do basically backstrokes. That's to keep your feet from going down and catching on, remember I said, the stuff that's underneath the water that you can't see. So, and then if you it is safe, turn over and swim aggressively, try to get to shore.
Okay.
So you do have some time once that car starts to move.
Well, let's get one last call in. We just have a minute left. Howard is with us from San Antonio.
Good afternoon. Thank you for Rescue 3. They trained me late in my career. Early in my career, over 30 years ago, we did a first summer. I worked for this particular fire department. We pulled 14 dead bodies from the river.
Oh, my gosh.
And they were all sports, stupid people on raft trips. And thank you, Rescue 3, for your education. I got late in my career and never had to use it after that.
Thank God.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Howard, thank you very much for the phone call. And
all right.
We heard some situations that worked out, obviously some situations that didn't. Mike Turnbull, thanks very much for the advice.
Neil, thank you for having me on.
Mike Turnbull, president of Rescue 3 International, as we heard, trainers for first responders in flood, water, and rope rescue techniques, with us from Sacramento, California. Tomorrow, adjusting to a life of chronic pain, we'll talk with Melanie Thernstrom about her new book, The Pain Chronicles. Be with us for that. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Thank you.